Now it's on. Okay. My talk will be on mass conserving, or at least trying to achieve mass conservation with similar Grangian advection schemes, but with adaptive ones. And the main motivation here is, first of all, tracer advection, but of course we want to go further. So tracer advection is not the only thing we want to do with that. And in any case, when you want to have a good method, you need at least mass conservation. You would like to have other conservation properties as well. And so this is the first step only. This is ongoing research, so you will see a lot of pictures with plane geometries, but I will also show you a spherical picture just to be allowed to talk here. But anyway, my results are not that far anyway. Tracer advection for given wind fields like this one here over Antarctica, over the Arctic region, is meant to be very accurate, and in order to have this very accurate, we use adaptive grids. And you can see an adaptive grid here for this case on this side. What is interesting here is that you get such a high resolution that you can see fine filaments here, which you can't see in the regular grid. This is a similar simulation with the same number of grid points, or almost the same number of grid points, but with a uniform mesh. And what you can see is that you have a lot of numerical smoothing here, a lot of numerical dispersion, and you can see fine structure on this side. Now here comes the thing for the sphere. It's a solid body rotation, and we want to use the adaptive method again. And in contrast to the talk just before, our fine resolution follows the structure, and we don't lose accuracy here, at least in this case. So adaptivity is always a nice thing to have when you have isolated phenomena. It's not good. I don't claim that adaptivity is good for every case, and I'm not sure yet if it's a good method for global modeling, but if you don't try it, you don't know it, so we go for this. Just to give you a small, review the algorithm, the adaptive algorithm, we use a similar Grangian method, introduced by Robert in 1982, and this consists of essentially three steps. You have to calculate the trajectory pieces, you have to interpolate at the upstream points, that's the second step indicated by C minus, and then you have to update the new grid values. And the adaptive method just takes two more steps into this and makes a loop out of it. It's kind of an iterative method. You, after doing this step, you estimate the local error, either something like a discretization error or some indicators that might indicate where you have to refine your grid. Then you have to locally adapt those regions where your error is large, and you go back and recalculate all this. And the similar Grangian method is very well suited for this type of algorithms, because you can just throw in grid points and do your calculations on trajectories again. You don't have to recalculate all the grid points. You just recalculate the new ones. And that's very efficient. You also don't have any type of artificial interpolation to new grid points, which you need in Eulerian methods, where you, in a way, have to update the old values to new grid points which come into the grid. You don't have to do it here because you have an interpolation anyway, and everything works quite smoothly. It's also parallelizable, and so it has many nice features. It's very well suited, as I said, for adaptivity. Another point is that it's stable with So it's unconditionally stable, so in a way you don't have to control the error, not at least not for stability reasons in the adaptive case. Of course you have to care for accuracy concerns here, but you don't have to care for, you don't need a time step control in the adaptive method, at least not for stability. And it's parallelizable, as I said before. However, it's not conservative by construction, so you have to do something here. And this is the objective of this talk. We want to construct conservative schemes. Now, there have been people that did that before. I just want to shortly mention Priestley's scheme because we want to compare to that scheme. And there's another scheme by Xiao and Yabe. I don't know if I pronounce these names correctly, but these are only two examples. There are probably more approaches around. Now, I want to show you some, at least three types of methods that I use in the context of adaptive methods. The first was proposed originally by Scroggs and Simazzi, and also Machenauer and Org did some work on that, and they called it the cell-integrated scheme. First, think of a rectangular uniform scheme, a mesh. You do your trajectory calculations and get a distorted upstream cell. We want to just zoom in here to one grid cell. So what you have to do is, in order to update the value, the semi-Lagrangian or the new grid value for a cell, you have to integrate essentially over this distorted intersection with the old mesh. And Machenauer and Olsch and Egil Kass as well, I think we will hear a talk on that, proposed a very efficient way to calculate this. They just introduced like center points on the edges, and then you have a cell which is rectangular, which has the same volume like the distorted cell, and then you can integrate over this one and get very nice results. And that's very efficient. So instead of calculating the original semi-Lagrangian formulation, just update by the upstream value, you have to, in a way, calculate the volume of this cell and some whatever integrated value of C in this old mesh, some type of quadrature formula. Maybe for first order, it's just enough to have a mean value here. Okay, so in the triangular and adaptive. Pardon? Yeah, that's true. Well, I should mention that our method works in a finite element context. So you have, in a way, you have by constructing your basis functions, you have a distribution on the whole mesh cell. You can evaluate your values of your concentration everywhere. Yeah, but that's given. I mean, that's given by the finite element. It's continuous. You have a continuous subgrid distribution. Right. Yeah. So, in the triangular case, you have problems here. You don't have this nice property of just cutting your edges and then calculating something. So what we do here, we introduce a dual mesh. We want to have cells that correspond to mesh points. So this is the red points are the dual grid, are the grid points of the dual mesh. So each dual grid point corresponds to a primary cell and vice versa. So for each primary grid point, we have a dual cell. And in the adaptive case, these dual cells might even look not so nice as in a uniform context. So we even have different numbers of edge points and of grid points of vertices for the dual cells and so on. So what we need is we need to modify our scheme, but that's in a way straightforward. Let's look at the dual cell corresponding to this black mesh point here. We have to advect our dual nodes and also our mesh point actually. We construct the upstream dual cell and locally triangulate it by just connecting it to the center point or something like that. And then we have to intersect it with the old mesh, which might even look different to the original mesh, which induced the dual mesh. So we have to calculate an intersection here of these triangles with the underlying mesh. So we need an intersection algorithm, and looking at the computational geometry or computational graphic community, you can find these things. And this very simple algorithm here is given, for example, in a book by Angel. The input are two oriented and convex polygons. In our case, these are triangles. And then the algorithm is very simple. Go through all the edges of one of these polygons and clip what is to the right, what is outside. This works essentially like that. Look at this edge. To the left is the whole triangle, so the whole triangle is, first of all, the intersection. Now go to the next edge and clip what is outside, what is to the right, so you obtain this as an intermediate intersection. And finally, you go through this edge and clip what is to the right, and you have the intersection. So this works quite efficiently, very simple. It is made out of order 27 cross products, if I didn't miscounted this. So it's rather efficient. It's not free, of course, but it's not too complicated, and it's a very stable algorithm. So what we have to do now for a first order cell integrated scheme, for example, we just update our new grid points by a sum of volumes, and these are the intersections of triangles with the dual cell. In a way, these dual triangles and some mean value of the old triangles, of the old over the old mesh. Right. The volume is in a way the fraction the volume of the intersection is given here. So it's a fraction of the triangle volume. It has to be normalized. Yeah, of course, by your whole domain in a way. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. So for higher order, you have to in a way manipulate this thing here, and you just use a quadrature rule for integrating the C over here. So this works quite nice. Another method, the second method I want to introduce, I call this quadrature-based schemes, and it's in a way, I got the idea discussing with Frank Giraldo over his weak semi-Lagrangian, no, the weak Galerkin method. So what you do here is you, again, create your upstream dual cell, then you create quadrature points for each of these triangles and interpolate at these quadrature points the semi-Lagrangian interpolation, and then do the quadrature rule for updating your new grid points, your new concentration values. So again, you have weights here that are the volumes of your triangles, and then you have to sum over the quadrature points, and these are interpolated values. So this is not an exactly mass conserving scheme. However, it takes into account the volume of the upstream cells, so it works for different types of flows. And the third is just the simplification of this in a way. It works like follows. You create the dual cell again, then the upstream dual cell, then you interpolate at the upstream value and correct your upstream value by this fraction of the two volumes. So this takes into account when you have a converging or diverging wind field that this volume changes, in a way corrects your value. This is quite simple and very straightforward, and it's very efficient as well. So let me give you some examples. This is a diagonal wind field in the plane. Just it's a bit hard to see, but obviously something happened here. I left the mouse pointer in the window when I did the snapshot. So you have a diagonal wind field here, and the initial condition is this. It's a cylinder of value 1 in the lower corner here, and it should remain its shape, well, modulo to some smoothing, of course, due to numerical effects. Should different types of orders. For example, the cell-integrated scheme has first order accuracy. The other schemes are something in between first and second order. So what you can see here, the ratio of first moments, that's essentially the mass. The schemes work quite well. This is the cell-integrated scheme. The dotted red dotted line is a bit hard to see. This is the Priestley scheme, which is constructed conservative, but globally conservative, and these are the two quadrature schemes. And now I also plotted graphs for the dual mesh method and for clipping. That's the simple semi-Lagrangian method without any modifications, except for that you don't get these overshoots and undershoots for higher order interpolations. And of course, they are not conservative at all. The L2 norm, you can see that the cell-integrated scheme is quite bad here, and that's because it's a first-order scheme and not a second-order scheme or whatever the others are. Now, this is the non-adaptive case. In the adaptive case, you can see that things don't work as nice as in the non-adaptive scheme, and this probably has to do with a wrong boundary treatment. I will show this a little later. I will come back to that again. Now, a converging wind field. Things look different here. You have the initial value, the initial data here again. And what you would expect is that your cylinder grows in size because mass should be conserved. So this is the wrong thing that happens with plain semi-Lagrangian advection when you fix the interpolation. And that's what you see. The Priestley scheme, actually, which was constructed to conserve mass, but only in a certain sense, is bad here because it doesn't take this converging wind field into account. But the others are quite good, are preserving quite well. Well, zooming in shows that there's still some fluctuation there, but it's rather small. The diverging wind field test case follows. You have again the initial data here, and then it diverges, and of course the concentration value should decrease. This is the wrong answer here. And again, the Priestley scheme and clipping, which is below this line here, which is hard to see, increase the mass because they remain on the same concentration value. The other schemes are quite nice. Zooming in shows some fluctuation again, but still it's okay, I would say. Now, these are very simple test cases, and I want to show you this slotted cylinder test case as well, which is quite famous for plane geometries. It has this circular wind field that maintains all the properties of the cylinder, and the cylinder is then advected around this thing here. Now, if we look, this is the initial condition. This is after one rotation for rather nice, but non-conserving. This is with clipping, so it doesn't conserve mass exactly. This is the cell integrated scheme. So this is rather diffusive. And what I wanted to show you is, or what my indication for the error introduced in these plots of the mass conservation is that when you look at these grid cells here and you have some diffusion, you very quickly approach the boundary. So there are only like two or three grid cells. So the concentration here is only two or three grid cells away from the boundary. So as soon as you have diffusion in your scheme, mass very quickly goes out of the boundary if you don't treat the boundaries right. And I think that's the reason why we see fluctuations here. This is the quadrature rule. And this is, in a way, supported by this figure, where you can see the bad results here for the cell-integrated scheme, which go down each time the cylinder approaches the boundary, each quarter of a rotation. So it goes down quite quickly, and it loses. The farther smoothing is, the faster it loses mass here. So there has to be done something in our scheme. However, this all looks quite complicated and not very satisfactorily, but I still want to, in a way, argue in favor of adaptive methods, and this figure is meant for that. When you do a convergence analysis or a convergence test for the slotted cylinder test case, you can see the following. I did it for... I compared the finest resolution, and then I plotted the number of unknowns here, the grid points I need for this finest resolution, and the L2 error. So you see essentially first order convergence here for both schemes. But what you can see also is that the adaptive method uses at least an order of magnitude less node points for this singular thing, and even can, in a way, increase the order of the order of convergence because the slope of this line is steeper. So adaptivity, in a way, because you don't have to add many grid points if you have a local phenomenon, you can even increase the order of accuracy, the order of convergence by adaptive methods. And so we want to go further into that direction. So what I showed you was, I showed you several almost mass-conserving semi-Lagrangian schemes for adaptive semi-Lagrangian methods. I showed you also that computational geometry can help solve problems. So it's always good to look over the horizon into other communities, because they really can help solving problems. Adaptivity helps to increase or improve the order of convergence, and in many cases you can't even dare to do accurate calculations with the computing equipment around. I could do all these tests on this old laptop here. This is not complete, of course, so we have to do some work in boundary. We have to extend it to the sphere. And actually, the plan is to extend it to the sphere quite straightforward by projecting these methods to locally tangential planes.